Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Ah, can't you see it? A sparkling roadside EV quick charge power facility. It's chargers, control panels, and switchgear powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean. We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We're now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with you.
Sean.
Yes, good. So you and I were talking during the break about the conditions outside and is it windy out there? And so I told you, you know, it's windy out there, but Amy and I are lucky enough. Like, she's been out on our balcony today during the snow, just kind of enjoying it.
Yeah.
We're kind of protected from the wind because our balcony is sort of embedded in the building. It's not a stick-out-in-front balcony. But you were just bringing up how confusing the whole north, south, east, west thing can be because of 59. We're 59 north and south. Actually, for a long stretch, which goes right by our building here, is actually running east-west. It's very confusing.
It screws me all up. When I go from our building to downtown, it just never really registers that, like, oh, wait, no, now this side is 59 is west.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's Sean... It's been over 20 years now, and I'm way too disoriented when I like try to find my way around the
city.
With
you, man.
I know where to go and everything, but I never feel comfortably like really being able to visualize where I am. And it annoys me that I'm like that.
Yeah.
Because damn it, we're probably about 12 hours away from losing any kind of GPS or anything else like that, okay? when push comes to shove and it's time to start eating other people for sustenance, I feel like I'm ill-equipped, okay? I got a camp stove and not much else.
Somebody's up here. Somebody's up in our studio in a tent. There's a tent pitched over...
In the studio?
In the common area over there. Like I'm using studio as a general description of our office space up here in the studios. But yeah, there's a tent.
That sounds like they've got a new tent and they probably got a tent for Christmas and they're trying to learn how to set it up.
Well, there's people who are staying up here like overnight because of the emergency characteristic of all that's going on. But whoever it is has like one of those little folding tables that you have on it looks like a campsite. Like they've got all kinds of little trinkets out there.
It's one of the best benefits of having a job that starts at 6 a.m. is that you kind of get licensed to sleep at the office whenever you need to or want to.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, like, I mean, it's not like that if you work a 9-to-5. They generally frown probably upon, like, sleeping in until 8:30 in the morning and in the office and up while everybody else is there.
Brushing your teeth.
Yeah.
In the break room. College football playoff is over. Notre Dame lost last night 34-23 to Ohio State. Ohio State kind of carried most of that game. Notre Dame had a furious comeback in the second half. Came up short. What would you say? I don't know, a grade or just how overall, what did you think of the 12-team college football playoff?
I think it'll be interesting to see how they tweak the seeding and all of that. So you have to do that. I'm glad that at the very least they made a good argument for having 8 teams in the college football playoffs. Like that there were I'm happy with it. On the sum total of it all, they got to tweak a few things, but I think that it's an indication that maybe there's more parity than people wanted to believe. Unless that having that extra week off was really that damaging to the higher seeded teams. I'm not willing to go there just yet. You need more of a sample size and to run it for a couple years to see if that's the case.
Right, yeah, now. The word seems to be that they are. It seems like the possession arrow is pointed towards them actually making that tweak to it. You know, the seeding, the whole automatic bid for the top four conference champions. It might be something that goes away, and they just seed the teams. If you win your conference, if you're the five top conference winners, will all qualify, but you're not. You don't automatically Boise State get to be treated like the third best team in the country anymore.
Yeah, and So I'm all for that, and I'll go back to. I can remember talking to you and John Granato on the phone about this back when you guys used to have me on the show. Mm-hmm. The thing that is always constantly driven me crazy about the way they do it in college football is that they act like there needs to be some type of innovation to do what every single other sport does in college sports, which is, you got a big tournament and you let them play the tournament and then you have an actual champion.
Yep.
And the amount of debate and everything else that took so long to get this point where you're just doing it like every single other sport does, it's driven me insane. So, yes, 12 teams is fine for me with college football. Any illusions about these kids needing to be protected because they're amateurs or anything else like that are far out the window by now. So, the basic structure is good. They just got to tweak some things.
Yeah, they got to tweak the seeding part of it. I'll be interested to see if the bowls remain so integral once the quarterfinals hit, that the first round. Because those games, the games all sucked. They were all very lopsided, those first-round games. But just the spectacle of having them on a college campus, I thought was made for a really fun watch,
I think that part is really good, too. Yeah, the bowls and all of the financials and everything else, the interests, the special interests or whatever that go into all of that, that's been the part that's always eluded me, and I've never really fully grasped or understood just how. There's a lot of good old boys type stuff going on with a lot of that.
Yes.
That's the part that's always felt dodgy and has prevented them from doing things the right way. I think as much as you might be cynical about the influx of money because of NIL, I think it resets the benchmarks for what the financials are, and it allows you to do more of what feels like right. Mm-hmm. Okay, back in the day it was great, and who cared about the national championship because the Rose Bowl meant so much. Okay, that's been 40 years since it was like that.
Yeah.
So you just got to keep hammering away at some of these antiquated things and treat it like a normal sport.
I like that that the tippy-top teams, like the Georgias and the Alabamas, seem to have come back to the pack a little bit. I think that's more that has less to do with the playoff and more to do with NIL and the transfer portal and things like that. I don't know. I know there's fans of the SEC out there that love seeing SEC teams. And Texas is an SEC team. They're the newest SEC team. So they did get representation in the Final Four there. But there were some fresh matchups at least,
I think, and honestly, if you're in the SEC, I would be all for weakening the SEC because how many years does it have to take of just, hey, you might have the smartest coach in America, the best coach in America, and some of the best talent in America, and end up barely over 500 if you get a few bounces of the ball the wrong way, that when the SEC is at its most formidable. So the balancing out, it can be a good thing because it's never going to be completely fair. But I don't like situations where you see this in high school sports all the time, where depending on how different states operate, sometimes the second best team in the state doesn't even get to go to states.
Right.
They lose in the finals of their region or their section. And I hate it when there's situations like that. As much as you can actually get the best teams all in a group at the end of the year and give them a chance, go for it. But with the SEC, there'd be teams that no matter how you structure it, when the SEC is super, super powerful, you could have the fourth or fifth best team in the country not even be in the conversation.
Yeah, no, for sure. Middle Screen is texting in, big college football guy. If the games aren't going to be close, might as well not include at-large teams. College football needs to be over earlier. More games on campus. no buys, fewer teams. Sounds like he wants an 8-team playoff. No buys, fewer teams. The way you have no buys is to have either 4, 8, or 16, you know?
I would ask, middle screen went to Cal. He was a shot putter and a discus thrower.
Cal or Cal. UCLA? I thought it was UCLA.
Oh, that's right. He went to UCLA. Yeah, I apologize. Yeah, sorry. Yeah. Sorry, middle screen.
Yeah. He didn't go to that.
He wasn't smart enough to get into Cal.
He didn't go to that ACC school, Cal. He went to that Big Ten school, UCLA. Yeah.
I'm joking, middle screen. Yeah. I know you're plenty smart.
Yep.
I need some people from Cal, our many, many listeners from Cal, to weigh in on Chip Kelly and whether he's lost his touch or not. Whether he's he just won a national championship.
Yeah.
I'm getting a lot of people saying that because I floated Chip Kelly as a Texans offensive coordinator in there. Chip Kelly is currently the offensive coordinator for the Buckeyes. They just won a national championship. I just found it odd that I got a couple of people saying, like, he's out of touch and he's antiquated or whatever. Like, all right, listen, I get, yes, he's got a lot of talent. He just won a national championship.
I know.
I'm not going to buy the old man argument right this moment, okay?
I tell you, I don't watch Ohio State and go, boy, they sure seem antiquated out there. I don't know. It's
You're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't.
How about, it's just shifting gears over to the NFL playoffs. How about the NFC North, the beacon for high-level football in the NFL this year? They had a 15-win team, a 14-win team, and an 11-win team all make the postseason. 0-3 in the playoffs. Mm. Outscored 94-50. I guess this is where...
So who was more pathetic in the postseason, the SEC or the AFC North?
NFC,
like, who was
NFC
a bigger
North,
letdown?
Yeah. Yeah,
the NFC North,
yeah,
too.
I would say the NFC North was a bigger letdown. I mean, they were, like... Dude, 94-50 in the NFL, getting outscored 94-50. That's hard to do. And Detroit was at home. The other two were on the road. But I think the biggest thing is, like, okay, Sam Darnold. Hey, he's a version of Jared Goff, who's also involved in this storyline as well. You know, and then
Those guys. Those are the two guys where you look at it and you say, man, they had a lot of regular season success, but now Jared Goff, a couple times now, has just really kind of deflated in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And you do wonder, all right, well, is there a ceiling on him? Is there just... there's a reason Sean McVay wanted to part ways with Jared Goff. And curiously and ironically enough, the Lions brought Jared Goff in and let go of Matt Stafford, who ends up winning a Super Bowl.
Yep.
I don't know.
Washington, the last time Washington, this actually, Mike Sando has this, the last time Washington was in the conference title game was 1991. That was the Mark Rippon team that beat the Bills.
Yeah.
That was 7 presidential administrations ago. And Magic Johnson, who is now one of the owners of the Commanders, was getting ready to play in his final NBA All-Star game. That was the year that 1991 was the year that Magic found out he had HIV. And that's how long ago.
1991 that was when he found out he had HIV.
Yeah.
Kids, you got to understand, back then AIDS was a death sentence. Like a 100, I mean obviously it still can be, but like it was 100%. Like it was like you were getting Magic Johnson's obituary almost when you found out he had AIDS.
Dude,
it's
crazy that you say that. So on my Twitter timeline, which now is for most people, like it's 20% people that you follow and then 80% stuff that gets fed to you because they think you want to read these things or see these things or whatever. Bill Simmons wrote an article, I think for like the school paper at Holy Cross where he went. I'm looking at it right here. Bill Simmons, the Holy Cross reread of the Holy Cross student newspaper. He was the sports editor, and this was his reaction to Magic Johnson's HIV announcement the next day. I can't remember the last time I was truly unhappy before last Thursday. Unhappiness is lousy, bitter emotion. Sadness, most of all, real sadness, genuine, unadulterated sadness is what I was feeling. This is how I felt last week when I learned Magic Johnson was going to die. And he will die. You can listen all you want about people who fight the HIV virus, but the truth is, anyone who lasts for more than a few years is an aberration. He goes on and on and on, and it reads like an obituary while Magic Johnson is still Like, actually still getting ready to play basketball in the All-Star
game. Did you find that on Freezing Cold Takes? Is that the...
No.
I should have said it, HIV positive, obviously, the difference. But, when you found out he was HIV positive, it was a death sentence.
Yeah. That was just... I'm reading this. I'm going, holy crap. Yeah, it was a Freezing Cold Take eventually.
Wait, how many presidential administrations ago did they claim that was?
Seven.
Four, 5, 6, 7. Yeah.
Yeah.
Does that include 2 Trumps?
Yes. Yeah, probably.
Yes, it's 2 Trumps.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah, 7.
So that, all right, that makes sense.
7.
Wow, that it felt like too many. I
thought
like
the same thing. I counted.
I'm like, wait a second.
I was in front of my computer yesterday doing the same thing you were. I'm like, 1, 2, 3. I'm like, dang, and a couple of them were 8-yearsers. You know what I mean? Like, a couple of them were jumbo.
A couple of double bangers.
A couple of jumbo administrations in there, man. It's a long time.
So 7 administrations, but with only... This feels a little bit like when you're going over NBA championships and you're like, it's only been 3 or 4 teams. Like, 7 administrations, but 4 of those administrations are occupied 2 guys with the same last... Well, 2 last names.
Yeah.
Bush and Trump.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. How about this take right here? The NFL is going to swing the other way in this next game with Mahomes because of the national attention that his flopping and his sliding has gotten. The Bills will benefit at the cost of the Texans. That's a hot take right there.
I do hope so. Man, I feel like if you do a Pender poll, Sean. Mm-hmm. Oh, this, I'd be fascinated with the results of the number of your Twitter followers who are pulling for Kansas City or pulling for Buffalo.
Okay, so in general, who are they rooting for?
Yeah, Houstonians are, I mean, we're fans of the Buffalo Bills right now, are we not?
For sure.
Like this is, this is pretty easy. Plus, we don't have any really natural, I can't even think of like kind of any kind of game versus the Bills that would have become a grudge match type of thing.
Not with the Texans, but for Oiler fans.
Well, obviously.
Houstonians.
Yes, obviously.
Yeah.
But as far as Texans versus Bills, we don't have any of that. It comes up, the Oilers' history and the comeback, that all comes up every time the Texans play the Bills. But I don't even feel amongst the old-timers that there's that same animosity when it comes to the Texans versus the Bills.
So no additional detail, no nuance to it, just who are you rooting for, the Bills or the Chiefs?
Yeah.
Simple.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
I'll do that during the break. What's your prediction?
95% Bills.
I think it's going to be very lopsided, and I think it's.
I would imagine the Bill. I would imagine the national polls are the same too.
Yeah.
Just because people don't want to see Kansas City doing it 3 times in a row.
Well, it's funny. There were a couple graphics that got put out that those Twitter graphics that they take the United States and they go, oh, here's who different states are rooting for, and they put the logo or the team colors inside each state. They put one up for each of the title games, and the whole country is Buffalo Bills blue, except for like this little morsel right in Missouri and Kansas. And then they did the same thing with the NFC title game, and the whole country is burgundy. And like little corner where Philadelphia sits, like Pennsylvania and North Jersey or South Jersey, I should say, is Kelly Green.
The Bills, have more of a lovable loser feel to them, and that they got so close so many times. Washington has had their day back in the past. I would be interested to see what the breakdown is for guys our age who remember the really good Redskins teams from the past versus now. But emotionally, I think more people look at the Bills like, man, they got so close and they were so good, they just never get it done. Sure would be nice. If you don't have a dog in the fight, sure would be nice for the Bills to get it done this year.
100%. All right, D'Amico Ryans met with the media yesterday, and he was asked to explain, I would say, one of the more controversial decisions that he made for that the loss to the Chiefs on Saturday. We'll hear from D'Amico Ryans coming up next.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're betting the NFL playoffs, you need to be listening to Cash the Ticket. We're breaking down every single game, totals and sides, all the way to the big game. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Be a lot of questions about, you know, staffing players and all those things. Just want to let you guys know that I'll take the week to make those decisions on staffing and all those things. So before everybody gets started, just want to let you guys know that.
All right, thanks. That was D'Amico. That was his basically an opening statement.
It was an opening no comment.
Yes. It was before any questions got asked yesterday.
It was almost like he was being sued for coaching decisions. Yeah. We were like, this is an ongoing legal matter, and we will not make any statements about it until these legal matters have been resolved.
That's right. That's right.
Or so, when Lovie Smith promised, remember when Lovie Smith promised that he would give us an update on
Justin Britt?
Justin Britt.
<Yeah. laughs> We're still
exactly
waiting.
What, don't worry. I'll let you guys know later this afternoon.
We never
found out.
We never found out. Can you imagine if Lovie Smith was at the Super Bowl this year for some reason, just bumping around Radio Row, and we get him? He went to a Super Bowl as a coach. He's bumping around Radio Row, and we get him on the show, and we sit him down, and the very first question that you ask him, any update on Justin Britt?
What the hell happened with Justin Britt?
Yeah.
I got the sense with Justin Britt that it was kind of personal related, and they just didn't want to delve into it. So that was his way of just kind of pushing it off, and then nobody really wanted to press the issue. We had bigger fish to fry at that point.
On a three-win team, there was a lot going on, yeah.
There might be Justin Britt seems like a pretty interesting guy. There might be an interesting story there, you know, that maybe Justin Britt would probably be the best guy to answer it someday.
Yeah, or if Justin Britt's on Radio Row and and he's there, we can celebrate that we found him, you know, like, and we can let Lovie know in text. Lovie
said that Lovie said you were going to be back that afternoon.
Right.
We'll make something up.
Yeah.
Did you hear what Lovie said about you when you were gone? He said you just up in RUNNOFT. It was
D'Amico Ryans was asked yesterday, I believe Cody Stutes asked him this, about the decision to start Shaq Mason in the loss to the Chiefs.
Yeah, Shaq had a really good week of practice. Shaq has been working a while to get back with us, get back out there, and thought he had a really good week. And overall, it was good. It wasn't good from collectively of how we protected, but it's not just one person.
So
no, it wasn't just one person. I guess the biggest thing is that, not that you want to make excuses, but there were more reasonable excuses or explanations for a couple of the bad pass protection plays. Like Tytus Howard is still, he's playing out of position. I think if he chooses, if he chose to accept playing guard, I think he could be a really good guard. I think if he really latched onto it, and I think him next to Laremy Tunsil, we saw in that game, there were times where they had some really nice examples of good run blocking to the left there, where it was Tytus and Laremy just taking care of business. But Tytus gave up that one bad sack up the middle. But like, okay, he's playing out of position. Blake Fisher's a rookie, and you know, it's, we knew he was probably going to be a two-year project, so there's still hope there. It's Shaq Mason that there's just been very, there's been very little to get optimistic about with him moving forward. He's at that age, and his level of play is just not what it used to be. They got to bolster the interior offensive line.
How would you feel about an offensive line next year? As long as we're talking about this. If it were left to right, Laremy Tunsil at left tackle, Tytus Howard at left guard, Juice Scruggs at center, some free agent signing that we feel good about at right guard, and Blake Fisher at right tackle.
I think I'd still be concerned about either Patterson or Scruggs at center. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm willing to wait and see what a new offensive line coach can do with those guys.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going back to, you know, when Chris Myers ran a similar type of system here, there's some things you ask the center to do that are really hard athletically. And that's why, you know, Chris Myers was good partly because he was an undersized center. Yeah. He had a level of athleticism to him. There's, you know, not to insult Chris, he's not Jason Kelce, but similarly, like Jason Kelce, it helped him that he was a smaller guy.
Yeah.
I'd like to see it with a new offensive line coach. I'd feel okay about that. If they found another guard in free agency, if they drafted some absolute stud or something, and you've got a new offensive line coach, the new offensive line coach might make me feel actually okay with having maybe Scruggs at center and Patterson at guard or vice versa. Mm-hmm. If I can see some growth there, but there's got to be genuine competition. Our one listener was dead right, I think, in the preseason where he was upset that Patterson wasn't getting a chance seemingly to compete with Juice Scruggs.
Yeah.
I would agree. That guy was more angry about it than I was. I wasn't concerned about it necessarily. He was right to demand more competition. I think we need to see competition there. It really bothered me in general that they seemed like they were just giving Kenyon Green the job. I didn't get or understand that. That felt like, all right, this guy's getting this benefit of the doubt because he's a first-round pick. But there's got to be actual genuine competition.
And I'm guessing Kenyon Green is back for the last year of his rookie deal. This is the spring where they've got to make a decision on fifth-year options for guys in that class, the Stingley Kenyon Green class. I can't imagine he's going to get his fifth-year option exercised at all. So that would make 2025 the last year of his deal. It costs as much to cut him as it does to keep him. It's literally the same. He has a fully guaranteed salary, and that's it for this coming season. It's about $5 million. And so it costs the same amount whether he's on the team or not.
He's another guy that I'm willing to see what he looks like with a different coach. And maybe it's a different offensive coordinator as well. We have no idea right now. So I'm open to all of that. What I don't have an appetite for is just spending the entire offseason thinking like, well, we trust these guys that they'll make some development, they'll be okay. There's got to be at least one more guy in competition with those other three guys that we're talking about now, and there can't be a single one of those young guys that's just given the position.
Yep.
I've got no appetite for that.
I'm with
that's
that.
Just it. It doesn't. It seems to go against everything that D'Amico and Nick would preach.
Yes.
Which is like, you don't just gift these guys positions if they haven't proven that they're capable of taking them.
Yep. D'Amico Ryans asked yesterday in his press conference, is the standard high enough with the Texans?
Well, the standard that I said is always high, and as you guys hear me speak every week, it's about consistently improving every single week. Like, so the standard is there. It's just everybody being on board with that. That's where when you look at games, when it's like when the ball is snapped and it's action, you got to go make plays. Is everybody playing up to that standard? And if I'm correct, that's what I think CJ is mentioning. And that standard, when you get to the divisional game, like, you know what it takes to win. It takes everybody being bought in, dialed in, mentally and physically, like being on it and not having any lapses. That's that standard that we did not live up to in the game, and that's why we didn't win the game, because we didn't play up to our standard mentally or physically.
I wonder, you know, D'Amico is a self-proclaimed positive head coach. He coaches via positivity. You know, yeah. Every coach has a different style. This team played in several of their losses this year like a team that was kind of taking advantage of a teacher that's a little too light on them. You know what I mean? The degree of mistakes that get made by this team in some of these games, the penalties, the mental errors, the big plays, the tackling, like those all feel like things that a more disciplined team wouldn't do these things. Like the Texans, they were an undisciplined team this year. You don't lose the number of games they lose where only 1% of the teams ever had this, or this happen and went on to lose the game. I don't think you lose some of the losses they had the way that they do, plus three turnover margin. You're losing games, multiple games this season,
I guess,
without being an undisciplined team.
That's a broad brush to paint an entire team with, I guess. So I guess my question is, like, what are the examples of the actual undisciplined nature of those performances?
The offensive line at various times.
But they sucked all the time.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't know. I guess because they actually, look, the offensive line looked pretty good versus bad defenses at times.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, I guess the question is undisciplined synonymous with immature? Are they one and the same? Because I think with the defense, there were times where it wasn't a lack of effort, like versus the Jets, for instance. I mean, those were just guys making bad plays in moments where that they should have, maybe a more mature or more experienced player would have made.
Yeah.
You know, Jalen Petrie was a few centimeters away from breaking passes up, but because he didn't break the pass up, they ran for touchdowns. Or Jalen Petrie just flat out got beat by Davante Adams on that. He just wasn't physically capable of covering Davante Adams in that moment.
Yeah.
And I didn't really think there was like a lack of effort in those moments. I think they just weren't a genuinely really good football team.
Mm-hmm.
And they played like a 500 football team for much of the year. I guess it's kind of like calling a team soft. I have a hard time just blankly calling them undisciplined when the simpler explanation is like they also just weren't really a genuinely really good football team.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Itemizing the undisciplinedness probably would make for a longer segment. You know what I mean? Like, they were just...
Right. But it is, it's an accusation of, it's like calling somebody soft. Like, all right, I gotta see evidence of where they're actually soft and not just, it's a shorthand way of saying that they sucked if you say they're undisciplined. I think they weren't as good as they looked on paper.
Mm-hmm.
The undisciplined part, they have... The first half of the season, offensively especially, the penalties were out of control.
Yeah.
And, yeah, is that a lack of discipline? I think so. But they cleaned that up. I guess I just more lean towards, no, on offense, they just weren't good. They just weren't competent as I wanted them to be.
Where do you come out on the tackling? Is that just, hey, this is how they're coached, and that's really more on D'Amico maybe than it is
on
them?
Yeah, I think it's on D'Amico. Yeah. I disagree with D'Amico and his philosophy on tackling.
Yeah.
And it's honestly, it's a little bit of an offshoot of the fact that there's actually very little good tackling instruction in the NFL. I've told you before, I never actually had somebody really teach me how to tackle in football until I was in my fourth year in the NFL. Right. I had coaches who thought they were coaching and teaching tackling, but they actually didn't know what they were talking about. And I think maybe D'Amico's just never actually been exposed to good tackling instruction. It might have been something he did well as a player naturally, but there's very, very few guys out there that know how to teach it the right way. I would advocate bringing in an actual tackling coach like other defenses have done before. The Seahawks, when they were really good, had a rugby dude that, and they used a lot of rugby drills. Because, but D'Amico has flat out said that they don't worry about missed tackles. And that part of it's foreign to me. I don't, the swarm mentality, it's almost like just gunning up a bunch of threes and thinking that's enough.
Yeah.
You know? Like, no, it's okay to shoot a bunch of threes, but you got to be taking quality threes and you got to be good at shooting the threes. I feel like this, thinking that the swarm mentality is going to cover up all the blemishes in tackling.
Yeah.
I think that is the wrong approach to take. I think he's flat out wrong in that approach.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. We'll hear from Joe Mixon in the next segment. What could Joe Mixon be alluding to? We'll ask John Lopez when we do the toss here. We're gonna run Joe Mixon's contention that Nick Caserio has something cooking. Is he just kind of saying it, or is there something in mind that Joe Mixon has? We'll talk about that. If you haven't heard it yet, you're going to want to listen to this because this leads into what do the Texans need to get done this offseason with the roster. We'll do that coming up next.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyers Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, we start looking ahead to the offseason with the Texans. We still got a little football left with the two conference title games and the Super Bowl. If you've been listening to the promos running, we will be in New Orleans for the week leading up to the Super Bowl. So we're very excited about that. Joe Mixon is very excited. He's excited to bring in some new teammates, excited to recruit a little bit. He says he's a hell of a recruiter, and he seems to be writing checks with his mouth for Nick Caserio to go cash. I think I'm making that analogy correct. Joe Mixon's making, sounds like he's making some promises out here on these streets.
First of all, I'm going to say I'm a great recruiter. but another thing on top of that is I'm not here to sell no dream. You know what I'm saying? So at the end of the day, whether, you know, going to the Pro Bowl or if I was just at the crib and, you know, free agency started, whatever the case it is, man, when it come down to it, you know, definitely going to do whatever we can to obviously improve the team. When it comes down to it, you know, I just try to do whatever I can to help my teammates, help our team win and become successful. I mean, that's why I do this, and, you know, that's why I love the game of football, man. That's why I play this. So definitely look forward to that recruiting aspect, having fans, you know, very excited and engaged to obviously who we're basically additions to the team, and I know for a fact that Nick got something cooked up right now, so definitely all excited for it, and fireworks will be here real soon.
Fireworks. The fact is, I know for a fact that Nick Caserio's got something cooking.
I think the biggest thing, and now that I've listened to that 7 or 8 times, mm-hmm. and I've thought about it, is that, I feel like I know for a fact that Nick's going to make moves. That's what he does. He's a more active trader, and he just flat out has more transactions than just about every other GM in the NFL.
Yeah.
So whether or not they're fireworks, I suppose that's up for debate. But he makes a lot of moves. He's a very active general manager. So I think that Mixon probably feels like, I know for a fact that means, because there's no possible move that right now would already be in the works or anything, even if it's something that they wanted to do. So I don't think, now question would be, all right, does Mixon know that somebody like T. Higgins or somebody really wants to come to the Texans?
Former teammate, right?
Yeah. But then the question then is like, okay, but does Mixon know that Caserio knows that he likes this guy? Caserio plays everything so close to the vest. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's ever going to let anybody know that he really wants a certain free agent other right. than D'Amico and like whoever needs to know within the building.
Yep.
So I think that Mixon's not, I don't think Mixon is thinking of anybody specifically as far as something that might be in the works.
To your point, you're not going to wind up on Freezing Cold Takes by saying that Nick Caserio is going to make moves, that he's got
right.
stuff cooking. Like you can say that and know that it will happen. He's very active. You're right. You're
now,
right.
Now, okay, could he be as active this year as he was last year when it comes to getting brand names, marquee guys, all of that? And I'll remind everybody, in the first 36 hours of free agency, people wanted Nick fired because he hadn't done anything.
Right.
So, yeah, just... I mean,
speaking of Lopez, he won't be in today. He got stuck in the snow. Yeah.
The Texans ended up having one of the most active and highest spending free agencies. The first 24 hours, I can't remember the exact timeline. I know on day one of free agency, people are ready to burn down the franchise because Nick hadn't made any moves yet. So, he's going to make moves. I don't know. I'd be surprised if it's as aggressive this year as it was last year.
Well, I don't know that he's got the resources to be as aggressive. I mean, you can always manipulate the cap, but he had an ungodly amount of cap space last year to go spend. And this year, I think I saw somebody with an educated opinion. I don't know if it was Texans cap or somebody who summarizes things like this that I respect their diligence in getting it accurate, you know, getting it right. Is the number right now is like between 10 and 15 million somewhere that they have in cap space, but they've got a ton of deals. That number can move based on cutting guys, restructuring deals. It sounds like, Seth, between having their full complement of draft picks, at least premium draft picks, because they have their own first still, between that and the ability to create cap space, that they're in a good spot to be able to address some of the things that need addressing.
Yeah, and I think I guess if you look at the composition of the team, there's just more guys. Because of all those guys you signed last year, there are just way more high-paid veteran types of players on the team right now than there were last year. I think that Nick and D'Amico felt that there was a need to import A, talent, but also probably B, veteran leadership. And they'll continue to want to do that, but I don't think in the same mass quantities that they did last season.
By far, the biggest name free agent for the Texans is Stephon Diggs. It's really no disrespect to a lot of the role players on this team, no disrespect to any of the interior defensive linemen who I think, if we're talking about kind of the journeyman or the fringe player types that overachieved what they were expected to do, that's probably the position group that did. But it's like Stephon Diggs. I'm going down the list here, and like I think Stephon Diggs has made more Pro Bowls than every other guy that's a free agent on the Texans combined. Mm-hmm. You know, like Derek Barnett, if he wants to come back for another year on the same deal he had this year, come on back. You know, Neville Hewitt as depth at linebacker did some good things this year. Foley Fatakasi and Mario Edwards Jr. are both free agents. I'd love to have both of them back at the same price. That'll be what's interesting, is a lot of these guys played above the level that was expected. So, like Mario Edwards, when he was on the field, was really good this year. Like to some team, I'm not saying some team offers him a huge bag or anything like that, but he's, as was pointed out by, I think, Will Anderson, when he said, man, Mario's been in the league 10 years, is only the second time he's made the playoffs. Mario Edwards ain't getting any younger. Like he's only, I don't know what he does in his spare time or what hobbies he has or, you know, investments that he's got or whatnot. I'm going to venture to say there's a good chance he's not walking into a job where he can make $5 million a year right away after retirement.
Yeah.
You know?
I wonder, so if they go for a wide receiver in the Texans, I believe right now they're going to pick 25th.
25th
right?
is where they're picking.
25th.
That's right.
So it's not a heavily loaded year for wide receivers. It might work out that whether it's a Buka or somebody like that from Ohio State, that 25 might be the sweet spot.
Yeah.
Then maybe they just sit there. But I guess, do they trade up? Do you expect, if you had to put an over-under right now or like just a percentage chance that Nick trades up in the first round, what do you think it is?
I think it's 20%.
Yeah.
20%. Yeah. He's done both. You know, when they needed, you know, when they wanted Will Anderson, they traded up and got Will Anderson. When they felt just as good about the top of the second round last year as they did the end of the first round, they moved back and got an extra pick and traded it for Stephon Diggs. So, I think probably 20%. If it was totally up to Nick, maybe a little bit higher. The thing is finding a team that wants to dance with you, you know.
You gotta
find a trade partner.
Where are you right now on when do we start doing our what do we do with the mock draft stuff?
Mock draft injection.
Mock draft
That's what it was, man.
The mock draft injection. When do we start our mock draft injection? Just last week, just a few days ago, we were like looking down on all these poor radio hosts in other markets that had to look for, look at this. They're talking about the off season already and coaching searches and everything else. We are now in that motley lot. Yeah. When do we start doing the mock draft? I haven't looked at a single mock draft yet.
I glance at them now. I don't look at them nearly as intently as I did back when they were, you know, picking 3rd and 12th or whatever it was. I would say after the Super Bowl. After the Super Bowl's over.
I think I just looked at my first one right now, CBS's mock draft.
Okay.
They've got the 20. So Igbuka is going 21st to the Steelers.
Okay.
The Texans, they've got Walter Nolan, defensive lineman from Ole Miss, going. But that would make sense. I mean, he's an interior defensive lineman. My early odds on who they would take with number 25 overall would be probably wide receiver or interior offensive line. And that's perfect. Good guard back of the first round. You know, guard isn't one you, unless it's a real superstar stud, you don't want to draft a guard all that high necessarily. Defensive tackle, I kind of feel like what we've been talking about, that if the situation's right, by all means, go for it. But I feel like they can make do and get the most out of a lot of journeyman type of guys.
I'm with you.
Maybe get a developmental guy in the mid rounds.
Yeah, they got to feel pretty strongly about that guy if it's a defensive lineman, an interior defensive lineman there, for me. But if you do recall, Seth, remember last year, not to toot my own horn, but remember the one guy I said, man, the Texans, they were back when they still had a first round pick before they traded it to go get Stephon Diggs. I said, man, you know, if Brock Bowers gets in that 18 to 20 range right there, and the Texans have the 27th pick, I would say, you go up and get him. I had that one right. I wasn't nearly as right when I wanted the Texans to take Johnny Manziel with the first overall pick back in 2014.
Okay, so as far as for the Texans and how we'll watch the draft at the very top this year, likely not going to be the Texans. Cam Ward going to the Titans and Shedeur Sanders going to the Giants.
Bring it on.
Yeah.
Bring it on.
Give me all the Cam Ward.
That's it. That's it.
Let's do this.
That's it. That's it. So you'll have four quarterbacks in this division if they do that. Two of them are number one overall picks. One is a two, and Anthony Richardson is the laggard at 4th overall pick. You'll have four quarterbacks that were top four picks in this division if they go ahead and do that. Reggie Atatula is here. Chris Partee is in for a stranded John Lopez.
Ah, you heard about this then?
I did. Okay. Well, Parker showed us the picture. Apparently,
there's a picture.
There's a picture.
He abandoned his car, or his truck, rather.
Okay.
Yeah. I like to think Lopez just shoved his car into the gully and just doesn't feel like coming to work today. He's like, nah, I'm going to enjoy this snow out on my front porch. Jan, shove the truck into the gully so it looks like I
He didn't even do it
here.
Himself.
No, yeah, Jan, do it. Yeah.
I always wonder sometimes in situations. Well, that's a horrible thing to think about, but I always wondered during Harvey, like some of the flooded vehicles, like, okay, there's probably some moments where somebody is like, whoa, gosh, I just couldn't get to it in time, insurance company.
Shucks.
Is John happened. Lopez committing insurance fraud? We don't know. Nobody will ever know.
Is Houston.
I'm sure John tried to get here. How we feeling, fellas? How you guys doing?
Warm. Which is nice.
You look warm. I like that coat.
Thanks,
that's
man.
That's a nice coat.
Top coat. Yeah, I think broke out the Manchester United scarf. Like,
there we go.
We don't get very many opportunities to get in here with like warm weather gear. So I was like, I'm gonna actually go ahead and do it.
Not that it's not nice to see you, Chris, but we were looking forward to bouncing Joe Mixon's comments about. I know for a fact that Nick Caserio has something cooking.
Oh yeah, those are the things that get under his skin.
And run it through the Lopez truthometer.
You know what? We're gonna get him.
So he's not a fan of that. Lopez is not a fan of those.
No, he's not a fan. What he doesn't like is the people that are like, I know something, not going to tell you, but I know it.
Oh.
And so that they can come back around and be like, see, I told you. And it's like, but you didn't prove that you knew anything.
Yeah.
You were just alluding to something
annoying. That is annoying.
And that's what it feels a little bit like
maybe
Mixon might be doing there. Although I think he has earned our trust at this point.
I would say so.
Yeah.
By running like he did.
Yeah, exactly. Come on now.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think we were more like Lopez as the one on the station who most often states his opinions as if they're fact.
That is fair.
You know, so I was very curious what, but that's what tomorrow is for, assuming he gets his truck pulled out of the
Yes,
ditch.
But what I'm going to do, because he is, in a way, like I am a little bitter about him getting a day off without, you know, putting it in, right? Yeah. This might have been the plan now that I think about it. He knew that hill was there. Right?
But a hill. Yeah. Yeah. Everybody knows how hard it is to navigate all these hills in Houston.
That's right.
It's just like, how do I even get a, how do I find an area where I don't have to pass over a hill?
That's right.
To get here.
That's right.
Yeah.
So I feel like what we're going to do to keep him on his toes, we're just going to periodically call him and ask him about his thoughts.
Oh, yes.
So
do that.
That's the first, that's first segment he is on the phone. No, we're calling him about. I think I'm going to put the over-under at 4.5.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, man, I want to slam that over. Let's go.
So now we got to beat that.
Let's go.
So
yeah,
be
yeah,
ready. Oh, you need his number? Don't worry. I will send that to you post-haste.
All right. Fellas, have a great show. Seth, antibodies to you, my friend.
Antibodies to you. And I hope you don't run into just too many steep hills in Houston on your way home.
To be
Sean.
Fair to John,
this is,
John.
I know, I mean, it's just the topography of this city. I know it's difficult. It's difficult.
John lives kind of at the bottom of a hill. Like, I think it's
he
his
does,
own street.
Yeah. Yeah,
oh, really? Wow.
Yeah.
But he's like, no, it's great. It'll be fine. I don't need to stay at the station.
Can you imagine that's the main reason he bought the house? Like, man, when it snows, there's no way I'm going to make it up that hill.
We're going to steal a few off
this. Yeah,
yeah, man.
When we get 4 inches of snow, Jan, I'm going to get to... That truck's going to slide right into that ditch over there. All right.
Heady play.
We are done. John, if you're listening, you know we're just joking.
I'm not. he speaks for himself.
All right. We're done. We are out of time. It's